Welcome back to the Success is My Religion podcast. We are partnering with the HBCU Experience Movement once again, this time for the HBCU Royal University Queens Second Edition. We will be interviewing the Queens for their next book that's coming out September 30th. I hope you enjoy these episodes. Next, we are interviewing Ayanna Spivey. We interviewed her on a previous collaboration with the HBCU Experience Movement, the Southern Edition, I believe. Yeah, Southern University Edition. Ayanna Spivey was born in the shadow of the Southern University in Baton Rouge, Louisiana. She was raised in Moreno, California. Ayanna's leadership skills and creativity revealed themselves early in her childhood from being involved in her home church's youth ministry, youth choir, youth council, and various social events. She really explored those skills while in high school, lettering in three sports, active in Associated Student Body, Black Student Union, and the becoming of the Southern California Regional President of Black Student Unions. These experiences laid the foundation for her time at Southern University and the beginning of her career in higher education through various positions in the Student Government Association, Miss Sophomore, and then Miss Southern on the Royal Court. She also took part in the new student summer orientations, football recruiting, and being a member of the Alpha Tau chapter of Delta Sigma Theta Sorority Incorporated. All these endeavors sparked the ideas of wanting to go into higher education. Upon graduating from Southern University with a bachelor's degree in interdisciplinary studies with a concentration in social work and sociology, she returned to California and received a Bachelor of Science in Higher Education Leadership and Student Development from California Baptist University. With the culmination of her secondary and post-secondary education, in 2016, she launched We Are Educated LLC. We Are Educated LLC is an organization that thrives to promote higher learning at HBCUs and inspire academic excellence through college preparation. It is the organization's belief that it can play a part in the increase of HBCU attendance by highlighting the benefits of the overall HBCU experience. We Are Educated LLC provided scholarships to assist undergraduate students with their matriculation through various workshops and fairs. We Are Educated LLC has provided about $3,000 plus in giving with its two first years. We Are Educated LLC has now reorganized, and We Are Educated Incorporated, a nonprofit tax exempt company. Since her career path continued in California, Ayanna has worked within the California Community College system for 7 years, working with various programs that included academic counseling, student services, academic success programs, and with the California Department of Corrections and Rehabilitation. Her passions for equity and student success are evident in the work that she does within her prospective departments by always putting the students and their interests first. It is her hope to continue within the community college system while also contemplating on the idea of pursuing a doctoral degree. In the meantime, she continues to be active with the Southern University Alumni Federation, Alumni Los Angeles Chapter, Southern University Young Alumni Network, and she was named as one of SU's 40 under 40 for the inaugural cohort in 2018. I hope you enjoy this episode with Ayanna. I'm here again with, how do you say your name again?
Ayanna.
Ayanna. Ayanna. She was on the podcast with the Southern Book by the HBCU Experience Movement. Now she, I didn't know she was a queen at that time. Maybe I did know she was a queen, but we're here to talk about the new book by the HBCU Experience Movement. And it's the Queen's Part Two edition coming out at the end of September. How are you today? And tell us a little bit about yourself again.
Well, I am doing good. Again, I am Ayanna Spivey. I am a fall 2014 graduate of Southern University in Baton Rouge. I had the opportunity to serve as the 83rd Miss Southern University in 2013-2014 academic year. I'm currently living in my home state, Southern California, working in higher education. And I'm an expert author on this second edition of the Queen's Book. So I'm really excited about that and kind of sharing my experience as being an HBCU campus queen. That's a little bit, yeah.
Can you talk about your experience being an HBCU queen then?
Sure.
Yeah.
It feels like every time I talk about it, I feel like it's so long-winded, but it started when I was a sophomore. I ran for Miss Sophomore, which is a class queen position, on the Royal Court. And from that experience, which is kind of odd because I grew up as a tom girl, like I didn't wear dresses, I didn't like skirts, like talking about it. Heels weren't really a thing. So transitioning to that kind of role, it was out of the ordinary for me, but for whatever reason, it felt good, and it kind of came natural in a sense. But being able to serve my class and do different programs alongside the class president, I was kind of encouraged to look into if I wanted to run for the college queen as Miss Southern. And so my junior year, I was like, you know what, I'm gonna do it. And thankfully, I came out victorious as the 83rd Miss Southern. And with that process too, like campaigning at Southern is like, I don't necessarily think it's comparable to any other HBCU campaign season, which is a culture in and of itself. But through that, like we have to do, at that time, we campaigned for like a week and a half. And so you have to do also like a review, which is like our pageant. So you have a talent, swimsuit, formal, you have a debate, which is more so like question and answer. So all of that, which was again out of the norm, and just speaking in front of people wearing dresses, makeup, all of that good stuff. And you have a talent. I don't know if I brought that up. So yeah,
What
you
was
have
your
a talent.
talent?
I sang and I danced.
Oh, okay.
So yeah, that was pretty cool. A memorable time. And after that, after like the campaigning was over, I found out I won. That year was really like a whirlwind.
Why is that?
Because it was almost like it was nonstop. And like maybe a few weeks after I ran or after I won, we had to get ready for the NASAP Student Leadership Institute, which is like a conference for HBCU student leaders. And at that time, Southern hasn't been in attendance for about 10 years. So the way they hyped up that conference was like everybody dresses to the nines. Like you got to make sure that you're on point. You got to have your introductions together and all of this. And so I was kind of nervous because in my mind, it's almost like this is a reintroduction to like society for Southern. So like the pressure was on. And what was crazy was we came in, our bus broke down or something on the way from the airport to the school. It was at Savannah State. And so it was kind of cool because we came in late. So like all the eyes was on us. So they was like, who is that? Where are they from? We had our sashes on, everything. So,
And
yeah, that
strutting
was a
in
great,
like
yeah,
y'all was,
strutting in.
yeah.
It was pretty cool. And from that, I gained like a lot of friends that I'm still cool with to this day.
From other
But at,
schools or
yeah, from other
from
HBCUs, yeah. So I that alone also just expanded my HBCU network and like just knowing different educated Black people across the country and being able to do different partnerships and then and things with these people has been dope. And this is almost 10 years later. So a great opportunity for any student leader attending the HBCU, the NASAP SLI conference is amazing. But after that, during the summer, my advisor, she came and was like, hey, we got an email. A representative from the McDonald's 365 Black Awards wants to know if you want to be the trophy girl for their award show at Essence Fest. So it was
What?
like, yeah, a good thing I didn't really plan for.
Mm-hmm.
So preparing for that, and that aired in August of that year of 2013. So I got the opportunity to give out awards this night. Be on the same stage with like Tatiana Ali, Brandy, so many different people. That was really cool. And then just
You
preparing
just talk
like
so nonchalant about it. Like, oh yeah,
Oh,
that was really cool. And this is what happened. I went to In-N-Out Burger or something. No.
I don't know, like it's almost a lot of times, like for me looking back, it's like, dang, I really did that. But like during the time, it was just like, oh, this is normal. And in hindsight, I didn't necessarily, it wasn't like it wasn't your normal or average thing that a Miss Southern had the opportunity to do at the time. So now it is normal, I guess. I don't know. It's always weird to talk about it. It was so much that happened.
Yeah, and it was an experience. Like
Yeah.
I mean, that's the essence of life is the experiences that we have. And
Yeah.
that's really cool.
Yeah. Like, and then what was wild, even more wild about it, was like the semester didn't even start yet.
Oh, really?
Like, I mean, yeah, the first day of class didn't even happen yet. That was just the
So
summer.
you had already won and everything. And y'all, you did all of that stuff before
Yeah,
the
that was in the summer.
dang. So you
Yeah.
came back to campus like on cloud nine. You was hovering above everybody, huh?
Yeah, kind
Not
of.
above everybody, but like just like
But like, yeah,
everybody
on
knew
cloud
you.
nine, like, yeah. And that's kind of a plus too. Like, so campaign season is always in the spring, and then we'll probably do like a fall campaign season for like the freshmen and like any other positions we didn't fill. But for the most part, by the time you're coming into the fall semester, everybody knows who you are because the paper released like who the winners are. The school has their official statement about the winners and everything, so they know who you are. But most times, you spend the summer preparing for the year. So like, you NASAP is now a thing, so everybody is now preparing for NASAP in the summer. You start planning for the SGA retreat that happens when you come back on campus. You start preparing for pretty much outfits that you'll be wearing to the games and other official events, along with your events that you'll have and host as Miss Southern and the Royal Court. So like usually the summer is full of planning and not as many like appearances. And so if there are appearances, it's all like related to like alumni conference and stuff like that. Whereas this summer in particular, it was NASAP, Essence
What
Fest
is what
award
can
show.
you what's NASAP? Like, what is that?
NASAP is the conference I was talking about, NASAP SLI, the Student Leadership. So I believe it's National Association of School Professionals, something like that, Student Affairs Professionals. That's what it is, the National Association of Student Affairs Professionals. And then SLI is the Student Leadership Institute, which is for the students component. So now that's a norm. We go every year now.
After being
So
gone for after not going
yeah,
for
after
10
being
years.
correct, yeah. So that's usually what the summer looks like. But I had the additional thing of being able to be a part of that McDonald's 365 Black Award Show. And so coming back for the fall, it's now like you hit the ground running because you now have to be at the SGA retreat. As soon as the SGA retreat is done, it's freshman week, so you have to be there. It's also welcome week where everybody else now comes on campus. So you have to be at all of these different events. And you really, it's just class, events, and like sleep for the most part. And then you have like you get ready for the first game, and if that's away or home, that will determine like how you travel. Yeah, it was a lot. It
Really?
was a
Did you,
lot.
I mean, do you think you were prepared for that when you were in high school?
In high school, no.
What and what
Heck no.
how do you think you weren't re prepared, or how do you think that the things that you did up until that point where you ran for Queen helped prepare you for that position? Because
Like in
you
high school or prior to that?
well just high school all the way, like your
Okay.
transition from high school into college. Like, how did you carry yourself? Like, what did you get involved in? Like, do you think that had a played a part in you getting to be queen?
Yes and no. So in high school, as far as like extracurriculars goes and like preparing me to like speak in front of people, was mostly like being in like youth council at church. So we did like a lot of different events, and like I sang in the choir or whatever. But as far as high school, I was highly involved in like our Black Student Union, and so I had the opportunity to be the Southern California Regional Black Student Union president. So that was from, if you know anything about California, it's pretty much it's big and it's long, but that region covered Bakersfield all the way to San Diego. And so we also had like a conference that we got to go to, and that kind of helped with my public speaking, and being like confident to speak in front of people, on top of just like doing presentations in class and things like that. So like the event planning and like all of that and speaking, I was prepared for, but like looking the part was a little different.
You
Like I knew, yeah,
was
like
a tomboy.
I didn't necessarily like putting on makeup every day and like putting on heels and like being in heels for almost 4 to 6 hours a day. Like that's a lot from somebody who wore Vans and Chucks all the time. Like that was a lot. And then going like my freshman year, I was involved in SGA as a student senator. And then I ran for Miss Sophomore, and that was more so of that was really the only position that was left that I think that I probably had a chance at, because my other friends were running for like class president, class VP and stuff like that, and I didn't want to be a senator again. And I kind of wanted my hand in more of like the planning and stuff of like homecoming and being involved in different events on campus. And so through that, like I had to learn how to do my eyebrows and put on eyeliner and curl my hair and like stuff like that. Which is, you
So
know,
the
basic stuff,
yeah
but
the
yeah.
so the I don't want to generalize it, but like the girly things like that.
Yes.
That's what some like something that was
Yeah, I wasn't really
really
prepared.
difficult for you to
Correct.
transition, it sounds like.
Correct. It was really like, I guess what I learned after I was Miss Sophomore, when I was like, okay, I'm really gonna run for Miss Southern, was I had to start dressing the part way before campaign week. Like I needed to, in my mind, because it's not necessarily the truth for every queen and every campaign and what have you. But for me at the time, I was like, okay, I need to start looking like I'm in Southern. Like, yeah, she's a queen. It is a beauty, you know, aspect to it. So you need to have your hair done. You need to, you don't necessarily even have makeup on, but you need to look presentable. Like, you need to, you don't have to wear dresses every day, but you know, look nice. Business casual may be, you know, a good outfit idea for the day. I don't know. It was just I was trying to do that, which did help. I and it's not like I didn't know how to dress or anything like that. I just would like prefer to walk around campus in some basketball
Just
shorts
in campus gear.
and
Like,
some tennis stuff, you know, like
and you wasn't
that
going
was what
out
I
or
prefer.
nothing. You
Right. I'm just going to class, going to I live here. Like
I'm walking out of my room.
So that was the biggest thing.
So I work at a high school. I've been in higher education for, I mean, my career started in higher education. So, I'm trying to prepare students for their future, and there are some that are, well on their way, but I focus on the people at the bottom, right? Maybe a little too much, but I believe that them learning to grow and pull themselves up to reach their fullest potential. The people at the bottom are going to be able to innovate different processes and things because they had to struggle through those things. And what would you suggest to a student or a young woman? Because I have a lot of young women that I talk to all the time that are in my program. I deal with the students that are taking dual credit enrollment. So there's a lot of young ladies that are in my program, and the fascinating thing that I heard you say was that you had like a vision, even though, I mean, if we know it wasn't your vision, that like it was already a established position of being queen, you had a vision of what that looked like, and you started preparing yourself to be that beforehand. So, being ladylike and, not cussing and understanding your surroundings and all of this stuff, that goes out the window with some high school girls. And I'm like, how do I make, I'm like big brother, almost, father figure right now. So, like I can be direct, but I also want to teach at the same time. I don't want to turn them all the way off.
Because I'm laughing because I'm remembering the girl that I was in high school that was loud, a little extra, didn't really know how to talk to people that well, especially like authority. So like I know what that can be like, but the
And talk
concept
about
of
that. Talk about that.
so a lot of people don't know. In the 8th grade, I got expelled from middle school, and it was wrong place, wrong time. A little bit of peer pressure in there, but yeah, got expelled. And from that, I went to like three different schools, my last year in middle school. So because of that, and coming from like gate and gifted classes, and then having to go to a continuation school and classes where they don't provide that. So I pretty much was like learning on my own for like a third of that year. And then by the time I was able to go back to a regular school, I like missed so much because they were already at the end of like a math sequence or whatever. So I struggled in like high school for in some of like my classes or whatever. But in that, I had structure. As far as like playing sports and stuff, so I had that, but at the same time, I've always had an issue with authority and more so just adults not acting like adults. And so, what that came,
Your perceived notion of acting like
no,
adults
it's
maybe.
still to this day. Like, I'm for whatever reason, I didn't like being disrespected for a very young like age. I'm like, I'm human, I deserve some type of respect. And you
Right.
know, a lot of times that's what a lot of girls and just young people are looking for, but it's misinterpreted as they're just bad students. They don't, you know, they don't listen, what have you. So one, what I do, I like to just change how I approach students, because I work with dual enrollment students on the college side now. And in one of my previous jobs, we did like a mentorship program with a lot of students who were fresh out of high school. So trying to change, like, it's not necessarily changing the behavior, but really just changing their mindset as far as you gotta learn how to talk to people. Like, and I didn't necessarily know that at the time, especially in high school. Like, things wouldn't go my way and I'm going off. And I wasn't necessarily a bad kid. I talked a lot and I just didn't necessarily take no mess from anybody. And a lot of times that bit me in the butt. But learning how to change just my approach helped a lot as far as how to articulate myself when I'm like angry, right? And so a lot of times what I ask my students to try to understand what's going on with them and how to reach them is really just like, okay, what do you want to do? And like, what are you doing it for? And I think that helps a lot, is figuring out, helping them to figure out what their vision is. Because a lot of times they, you know, you're in high school because you're supposed to go to school. Like, you're applying for these colleges because that's what you're supposed to do. And nobody really asks these kids, okay, well, what do you want to do? And then you can help them get there. But that concept of kind of walking in that space before you even reach it, I got that from a church sermon when I was like 11, 12. And it was just one part. My bishop was like, you know, I lost my job at one point, and you know what? It finally hit me. I woke up every day and I was in a suit. I'm in a suit every day and I'm just a secretary, whatever you said. But I started dressing like the CEO. Like, I wanted to, that was my vision. So I started preparing and looking the part. And so that's kind of how I did Miss Southern thing. But even in like high school, depending on what we were doing, or like what, when I was like president of the United Black Student Unions of California, like, I had to learn how to wear business casual. And so putting on slacks and putting on button-up shirts and stuff like that was moving into that space, because I'm not just a regular member of BSU now. Like, I represent not only my district, I represent now, you know, a whole region of students. And you have that whole aspect too of being a Black girl in America. There's it's one, being aware of your surroundings, how you're perceived, all of that. And so just trying to explain that to a young Black girl, it's a lot and it can be overwhelming. So it just is. Leading them where they are.
Yeah. I'm a life coach too. So it's almost draining, because you have to work people out of their environment and their circumstances and the adversity that they don't even understand exists around them. So I have to really build those relationships so that I can influence them more than their environment.
Right.
Yeah. So,
yeah,
I mean, and I only get, you know, maybe 20 minutes,
right,
any given time, and I have to be on the ball. I mean, I don't think about it anymore, because I've been in education for so long that it's just like, but I know I need to get a point across and for you to learn something in the time that I have to speak to you, whether that's walking around the corner in the hallway or, but I need to, what I use is reverse engineering, which is kind of like living in the future. And coming back into reality, right? So I walk students all the way through whatever their circumstances, I walk it all the way through to what they actually want. And if they don't know what they want, I create something just off the top of my head, like just based off of what they are kind of into or whatever, because I observe them all the time. And I'm just like, I got to walk you all the way through life so that you can get something from this conversation and that seed is just planted in you.
Right.
Because knowledge isn't enough now.
Right.
Like we have to do something with it. We've been surviving for too long, and these students that are coming up now, they need to thrive, and they have all the resources to do it. And I want to make sure that they take advantage of all of that.
Right.
No, so. That's real. Yeah, I try to stay real. It's hard. Like, I was at a school last year and the year before that it was a high achieving school, so everybody around there automatically knew what they thought they knew what the students needed, right? So in secondary education, you know, they are all about the numbers. So we're trapped in the numbers, and we're trapped in data. So we got to get numbers so that we can show that we're doing something. We got to look at data to get from one place to another. And sometimes data don't tell you what you need to know to give to the students. Sometimes
they always forget that qualitative part, for sure.
What'd you say?
I said they always forget that qualitative part of it all, for sure.
Yeah, because, I mean, I'm in a minority school with majority white teachers, so are in people. So I'm like, the staff is all white.
Yeah.
But I'm like, hey, this is what this is the little extra that they need, but it felt like it was going on deaf ears. So.
Right.
I moved to a worse school in the district, but I'm making an impact.
But those are the people, right? That's who needs it. Yeah, that's who needs it.
That's exactly what I said. And they was looking at me crazy when I was like, yeah, I'm going over here. And it was a choice of mine. They was like, why would you go over there? Like, because they need me, and these students need me, but y'all not allowing me to speak the way that I need to speak to these students, even though I did speak to them, but it was like always in private, you know. It was like it was me and them and nobody else, because, you know, black and brown students, the Hispanic population, they all need to understand what is going on in the world before they get there.
Right.
And I'm talking about these students was making 27, 30 on the ACTs, and some of them was getting full rides to different places. And I was like, yeah, I need to know going in, like, I need y'all to be unique in yourself, and you're going in these spaces so that you can thrive instead of and bring something innovative to wherever you go. But
yeah, that foundation got to be strong.
Right. If that foundation ain't strong and all your teachers are like, oh, you're the best. I'm saying you the best, but I need you to recognize you can't conform all the way. You need to bring that uniqueness, that individuality. And I probably just took over the podcast, but.
No, you're fine.
So what was. I know we talked about this probably on the last podcast that you were on for the Southern, but how did you choose your HBCU? Do you have family that went there before you?
Yes, I am a third generation Jaguar. My paternal grandmother graduated from Southern in the 50s. My father graduated and my mother graduated from Southern in 91 and 96. And so then I graduated a little less than 20 years later. So yeah, it's definitely inbred. Which is
how does that
dope.
Feel? Yeah, how does that feel? You said it's dope.
Because so I was born in Baton Rouge, while my parents were attending Southern, both my brother and I. And so I got to see both my father get his bachelor's and my mom receive her master's, in 96. So like one, that's cool, to be able to see your parents receive a degree. And then we moved to California. My mom's from California, so we moved here in 98. And so my grandmother, what she would do is every Thanksgiving, she would send my brother and I, and sometimes my mom, just Southern gear so that we can be prepared to watch the Bayou Classic game at home. And so that's every Thanksgiving weekend against Grambling State University. And it's one of the, they call it the granddaddy of HBCU classics. It's one of the only, if not the only, nationally syndicated HBCU classic. So growing up watching that every year, at one point when we was living in Georgia, Southern played like Georgia State, so we went to that game. But for the most part, I grew up watching Southern on TV. So being able to, I went to my first Bayou Classic my senior year of high school, and that was like my mom's way of like, okay, she now has options. Like it's her senior year, she done applied to all these California schools. Like she done applied to all these different HBCUs. She needs to go to Southern. So her convincing idea was, you know, I'm gonna finally take her to Bayou Classic. And so at 17, I'm going to see all of these Black people. First off, that is different. Whereas like everybody that I went to school with was mostly Hispanic or Latino and everybody else and then us. So it was crazy to just see all of these Black people in this one space. And it's like it's really good vibes. Like it feels at home. It almost feels like a family reunion. And I was like, yep, I'm going. because I got to see what was not on TV, which is like the Battle of the Bands, which is the night before that Friday, the Greek show. And then there's like a concert before the game. And then I got to see the full halftime show. And I was like, yeah, I'm going. I'm going. That's it. Fine. Whatever. So from there, I turned down my Cal grad, which is our like in-state grad. And then I had a partial scholarship to Tuskegee. And I turned all that down. And 2 days after my 18th birthday, I was in Louisiana for freshman orientation. And so that was in summer, July 2010. I didn't come home until December of 2010. So I was in Louisiana for 6 months. And yeah, it was a long 6 months. I was definitely
You was
very
homesick?
homesick.
Yeah.
Yes, very much so. Because it was almost like it's a culture shock. Like Louisiana culturally has like damn near six different cultures in one. So like different parts of the state, they all talk different. Like it's a lot. And then meeting like Black people from New York, Black people from Mississippi, Black people from Texas. It was just a lot of different people. And then here I come, like, hi guys, yeah, what's up? They're like, oh, you just turned into white. And I'm
Valley
like,
girl.
yeah. I'm like, first off, I don't have an accent. Y'all got an accent, like, chill out. But luckily I made friends and some of them have cars, so I was able to get around. And my grandmother was in Bogalusa, which is like an hour and a half south. And so she would always bring me quarters and food every couple weeks. I met my godparents, my brother's godparents actually, who just took me in. And they were in the next city over, so like I had them. So I had the support, which I think was the main reason my mom was really like, no, if you leave the state, like I want you to go to Southern because I'll have that like support and stuff. So yeah, and then the rest is kind of history. It was definitely different because just the experiences that my mother and father had, like they had kids when they were in school. They were non-traditional students. My grandmother, I mean, she went to school in the 50s and she played basketball. So there was that experience of being like a student athlete.
When they
So,
didn't want women playing
right.
sports, yeah,
Right. I want to say she
especially
was on
black
like the
women too.
second team. Yeah. She was maybe on like the second year they had a team, she was on that team.
Nice.
Yeah.
Did you is basketball one of your sports that you play?
So I played basketball
You
like 2 years
said you
in high
played in
school.
basketball in high school, played three sports.
Yeah, I played basketball, softball, volleyball, and then I threw for track and field my senior year. I was bored. Like honestly, half of the reason I did most of this is because I was bored. Like I can't just do school and that's it. Like
Right.
I could not survive. But yeah, I wasn't necessarily good at basketball. I just had a good time playing. I'll just say that. I enjoy watching it. It's a good time. I can shoot, 20% from the
Oh,
hood,
that's terrible.
Yeah, it's bad. But yeah, no, I wasn't necessarily good. Softball was really my sport.
Got you.
And volleyball was okay at, but yeah.
What position did you play in softball?
I started in outfield, so I did left and center. My second year, they pulled me in, and I was shortstop and third base.
Got you. I dated a girl that was, she played softball, Division One softball. So, and
So yeah, what's what?
her little sister played Division One. So when I was dating her, we went to her sister's games, and I was like, "Oh, softball is something." It, like when I have a daughter, I'm
Oh yeah,
like, "Go
that's one's
ahead."
intense.
It's a little faster than baseball. That's why
A little bit, yeah.
I like that.
That was the thing. My mom tried to get. My mom was like working with my godmom, to try to get me to walk on the softball team at Southern. I was like, no. I was scared.
Why
I'm not
not?
gonna hold you. I was scared. Because Southern is a Division One school, so there was that. And I was just like, I don't think I'm Division One ready. And
You
so I was
wasn't
like, you know what?
ready for
I'm
that
good.
commitment, huh?
Not at all. Not at
Yeah,
all. Because I
that
like
commitment is
college
something
sports.
different.
I wasn't ready for all of that. So I was like, no, I'll just find my way. because the other thing was like, growing up watching Southern, like I wanted to be a doll. I was like, my brother's gonna play in a band, he's gonna play the drums, and I'm gonna be a dancing doll, and that's gonna be that. But the thing was, I didn't have any dance experience, so I had to pick something else.
And they do one too, huh?
And yeah, so I was like, yeah, no, I'm not doing that. But the dope thing, so like everything comes full circle,
Okay, yeah.
for my talent, when I was running from the Southern, I had two dancer dolls dancing behind me, and I got to my line sister. She was the dancing doll captain that year, and I needed some dance shoes, and she let me wear her shoes for my talent. So that was like my doll moment. I'll take that. And then I'm
Hey,
like
and you
honorary,
won. And you
and I
won.
won. Yeah. And so like I'm honorary crab class of 2010 and everything. So it's I am a doll. It's Forever Doll, the original. Everybody knows, address me as such. It's great.
So tell us about the your chapter in the in this book, the Queen's book. What give us a snippet of what that entails and what
It's
people
really
can look forward to.
It's going through like how I was trying to run it to you, like what I did in like that first summer. That's pretty much what it is, and just talking about how like you, in so many words, God will kind of make opportunities for you, like just by being yourself, and like there will be so ooh, words. Let me find them.
You good? You good? Don't
Yeah, just
worry
being
about
yourself will make opportunities, like will give way just by being yourself. Because from that, like I said, there were so many different things that I had the ability to do that kind of changed the course of what Miss Southerns do today. And I'm just pretty much just speaking on that and the impact that I was able to have being myself. And like it was so crazy. Like something so small. This ain't in my chapter, but like during our homecoming parade, and to this day I cannot remember whose float this was, but like they drew a portrait of me on their float. Like that
Oh,
was
really?
crazy. Yeah, I was like, this is cool. Like I could not find them because I wanted to hug them and thank them, because it was like I've ne nobody's one drew a picture of me, let alone people I don't think I've ever met. So like that's the type of love that like you get from the Southern community and stuff, just being queen. And yeah, those type of things definitely leave like a lasting impact and kind of allow you to remind yourself like, okay, you did a good job, or you are doing a good job, and you know what you're doing is working. So yeah, that's a bit of what's in my chapter. And
And
just
what
wanted
are you doing now? So you're in higher
so
education. So what did you major in to get to higher education?
Academia was not really my thing. I always tell people I graduated in graduation. But I got my bachelor's in interdisciplinary studies with a concentration in social work and sociology. But I got my master's from Cal Baptist University here in Riverside, California, and a master's of science in higher education leadership and student development. So I work for a community college in Central California, within their counseling department. So I do ed planning and career counseling with our general population students, along with the incarcerated student population. So I go into prisons and do the same thing, and allowing for incarcerated people to get time off, receive their associate's degrees, go on to receive bachelor's degrees through various programs and partnerships. So that's what I do now. I am currently trying to relaunch my nonprofit, and with We Are Educated Incorporated, finalizing just the paperwork side of things, which is an organization that raises money for HBCU students, as well as promoting just the culture of HBCUs and HBCU-led businesses. So I'm looking forward to getting that done, knocking that out, and trying to keep, you know, the HBCU culture like prominent. And it's definitely great to see the resurgence of that, especially with athletes in these last few years. So yeah,
Deion Sanders and all,
Deion Sanders, yeah.
and they get they able to make money off their likeness. So I
Yep.
thought I played basketball too. So I thought that hey, if all the top black athletes are basketball players and
Yep.
football players went to HBCUs, that'll change the
Yep.
whole game.
Will change the game.
It would change the whole like the money, the everything. So if LeBron James, Carmelo Anthony, and Dwayne Wade all had went to one HBCU, what would that
It would do a
do?
lot. It really would. 'Cause I mean, we have them. You have like the Avery Johnsons of the world, and you know, Avery Johnson went to Southern and went on to coach and do all these great things.
Nah, man,
I
that ain't the
mean,
same.
it's not.
That
Well, what I'm saying is we haven't had
ain't
it since then. Because I mean, what was the 2 3 years ago when the NFL highlighted their Hall of Famers that went to HBCUs? Like a lot of people didn't even know that. Like their HBCUs weren't, you know, highlighted
What's the
or
legendary
had
coach from
Eddie Robinson. Went to Grambling State University. Yep.
Grambling. I was like,
Yep. Shout out
he
to my
sent like
friend,
two.
Blue Ivy.
Yeah, they he sent like 200
Doug
people.
Williams.
Yeah, all of them to the
Yeah.
NFL.
Yeah.
200 during his time. That's a lot. That's a lot.
Yeah. Shout out to Pete Richardson. He was the only one to one of the the university coaches to beat Eddie Robinson and Bayou Classic his entire time. But yes, Eddie Robinson
Really?
is great. Yeah,
Dang.
you know, I cannot give Grambling too much props without like bringing him back down. But yeah. But and that's the type of history that, you know, HBCUs have in football. Like, what's the coach at Bama? I cannot think of his name right now. But the Bama coach, like, he attributes a lot of his success modeled after Eddie Robinson. So, I mean, we're just
Nick
finally getting
Saban.
our props. Yes, Saban, thank you. Yes. Like, he attributes a lot of what he does to Eddie Robinson. And so it's like we've been here, you know, like we've been here for a while and we're getting that recognition again. It's almost feeling like a different world just came out and everybody's like, oh, I want to go to HBCU. Enrollment is definitely up behind this as well. So yeah, especially just in the last 10 years, we've had so many major SEC Pac-10 or whoever, Pac-12 schools, athletes transferring to HBCUs because they either weren't getting the recognition, they weren't getting the play time, or they just weren't getting the human decency or respect from those schools and going on to HBCUs and balling, like going crazy. So I'm excited to see how the world of HBCU athletics is going to change. But yeah, I'm excited because even think about Chris Paul is at Winston-Salem State. J.R. Smith just enrolled at North Carolina A&T. Granted, they're not playing at these schools, but they like, you know what? I want to go back and get my degree and I'm going to HBCU. Like that alone means a lot. So I'm appreciative for sure.
I think I say this a lot, but black people don't be they don't be listening, but I think we need to like we want recognition, right? But winning is way better than recognition, I think.
Oh, for
Like,
sure.
you know, so
Yeah.
I'm like, hey, let's go out there and win everything. I don't need no recognition. I can fly under the radar, but I'm gonna win every single time I get a chance.
Boom. So this I okay. So I made this statement a while ago after Deion Sanders got hired. And I was like, I want everybody to beat Jackson State. Not because, okay, there is a J Jackson and Southern rivalry, but not because I just wanted them to lose. It was, I wanted it to be like a message to come from that is like, we've had the talent here forever. Like, the SWAC specifically has always had the talent, the D1 talent, and Deion, his only like influence will be bringing the media to that. And I just really wanted everybody in the SWAC to like beat them so they could be like, oh,
Oh, okay.
so this
I
player
see what
from
you're
da da
saying.
da. Yeah, like I wanted that in a way for us to use coverage because we have this big name
That's
coach
strategic.
to be able. Yeah, that was my thing. And everybody's like, you're a hater. Da, da, da. I was like, okay, y'all missing the point here
No,
because I felt
that's
played.
thinking a little bit ahead of time.
Yeah,
Like
like I felt so played.
you beat the team, quote unquote, the team in the
Right.
conference because of
Right.
this and they bring in the you gonna get a
They
lot of
low-key was trying to bring a
recognition.
super team and all of that. Like the way his son be talking, like, we gonna be the winners. Da, da, da. Like, sir, the talent's been here. Like Jackson been getting they butts tapped for a while. Like it was that type of thing. Like it wouldn't matter who you bring here, we're still gonna beat y'all, is what I
But you
was
got a
what
little
my
added,
mindset.
you
Yeah.
got a little added exposure.
Exactly. Exactly.
The thing with sports and black people is that like especially at the coaching level, we never got that opportunity. So I study success. That's why Success Is My Religion is my podcast name, and it'll be one of my book names. But success is a time commitment. You
Yeah,
know,
for sure.
like if you don't get the time in those positions, that is a negative towards you becoming. So you can look
Right.
at America and the different companies that's been around for hundreds of years or whatever. Yeah, you had a head start, and we just now getting started, and we kind of competing with you. Imagine if we had the same starting point. And that's what a lot of people don't understand about what happened in American society. So yes, race does, I mean, it plays a part, and even though you weren't a part of it, it still held us back for so long that we can't really catch up. You know what I mean? And coaching in sports is one of those positions. So I like a couple years ago, I saw the Colorado Buffaloes head coach. He's a black guy, and he won like a against a ranked team for the first time in like however many years they have won against a ranked team, and they hoisted them up, and they was cheering and all that stuff. And I hear the announcer, he was like, "This man has been an assistant for 25 years, and this is his first time being a head coach or getting the opportunity to be a head coach." When we have a white guy as an NFL head coach at 32 years old. And I was like,
Bananas.
what that is the difference between you an NFL coach. They trust you to be an NFL coach at 32 years old, but they don't trust this man that's been a assistant for 25. He had to be assistant for 25 years just to get his first head coaching job at a Division I school. That is crazy to me. You barely been alive 25 years. I don't know.
Exactly.
I get excited about that.
Yeah, no, for real. 'Cause I mean, that was like a conversation me and my friends had like the other day, and just like how we can, move up in our industries. And a lot of it had me sit back and be like, okay, I need to reevaluate my network at this point. 'Cause it's like, I don't know if you can relate to this, but like if you have a network and your network is working as far as like you making connections for other people and, helping other people get into their spaces or, helping them elevate in certain ways, but for some reason it's not functioning for you, that's a moment you got to sit back and be like, okay, let me reevaluate what my network is looking like. Do I need to make different connections? Because you can be in a position for 25 years and you finally get your chance. And so like a lot of that I think has to do with one, who you connect yourself with. Two is the grind too in and of itself as well. Like it just sucks because the opportunities aren't, readily available. So trying to align yourself with people who can kind of escalate that process for us, whereas you have our non-Black counterparts. Because out here in California, like the Hispanics are up faster, way faster than we are as well. So it's like, what, aside from the whole institutional aspect, go
Is
ahead.
it like how are they moving up? Is it because they have the connections, or is it
Yes.
okay?
Yeah, they have the connections, like,
Because I'm trying to
because.
understand all of that, because like I work on personal development for myself. I know the opportunity is going to come, and if I develop myself enough, I can force that opportunity to come, because you won't be able to deny me because I either have the knowledge or the experience that is going to blow somebody away. And then at that point, I'm not even dependent on what you have to offer, because I'm gonna make my own lane, and then I'm gonna be the competition that you gonna I don't know. That's
But sometimes a
I
part of that, but a part of that too is you gonna make that way for yourself, but there's also your name has to be in places that you're not sometimes. And so
and
that
I understand that. I understand that completely. But I mean, not there's not a but. And my I build my reputation through the things that I do in the
Right.
community and stuff like that.
Right.
Just being conscious of that. Sorry to cut you
Right.
off.
And so no, that's the point there is like having to be conscious of that network and your reputation as far as like how is it going to help you too? 'Cause every time talking to you, like putting a word to the whole reverse engineering thing is, I didn't know that that was the term, but it's to mix that with scripture and, all things working together is okay. That personal development aspect, of course, working on yourself every day, grinding, making yourself better, reading, whatever you need to do. But it's also okay, who am I aligned with? How can they benefit me? Because at the end of the day, too, success is you can't waste your time on things that aren't bettering you or aren't, enhancing you in any way. And so a lot of times it has this negative connotation of, okay, what can you do for me? That is how you should live. Like, okay, what can you do for me? And if you're not helping me, you in my way. And so
That's it.
when I say like reevaluating my network, it's really trying to figure out, okay, I need help. And you're not helping me. Like, I'm not asking you to do it for me. Give me some knowledge or, put me in connections with somebody else. I'm not saying that that's not happening, but there is, that's something that I'm
That's
learning. It's
some,
like, okay,
yeah.
I need to,
That's another strategic move that you can have
correct.
under your belt.
Correct. Exactly. Another thing, like my friend mentioned, shout out to Shaq. He was talking about the difference between having a mentor and having a sponsor. And so, mentors are usually, you go for advice and you ask for assistance of like maybe like reading your resume or giving you advice before an interview. Whereas you have a sponsor and the sponsor is like, no, I'm gonna put you in this room or I'm going to like give you literally the tools, not even the tools, I'm gonna give you the answers. So I'm gonna give it to you already done. And you go in there and make it happen, like that type of thing where they're making space for you instead of trying to help you navigate that space. And so,
So,
all of these,
what? How
go
does a
ahead.
person? What? I don't. There may be enough, but I don't. What happens to the person that doesn't have a mentor, doesn't have a sponsor?
And
What
you
do
know
they
what?
have
There,
to do?
honestly, I'm in that same boat. I'm trying to figure it out myself, honestly. Because
And
again,
that's my specialty is that, hey, you got to figure out the information from somewhere, right? And we are in the information time. Like we have information at our fingertips. That's where reverse engineering comes from. Like, what do you want to do? Be clear on your purpose God, the universe, whatever you believe in, is going to lead you in that direction, right? And then there's and you can speed that up if you understand what you actually want, what is dear to you, and you hone in on thinking about your skills and developing your skills and your personality and how you are seen in the world. I took a personality test like a few years ago.
Was it
It's
the
a,
Myers-Briggs or something else?
no, it was the fascination how the world sees you. She's like the at the time she was like the number two public speaker in the world or whatever.
I know exactly who you're talking about.
You know what I'm talking about, but I took her test and I started seeing how the world sees me because I didn't understand that, and you get the archetype and they list some of the things and I even bought the book. I bought the second book to help you see how you work, how people work with you and react with you and how to put yourself in to those positions that work best for you and your development. And that was one of the key things, was just working on developing myself, because
Right.
if I develop myself for the position that I ultimately want, which my position that I want isn't connected to anybody giving me a position
Right.
necessarily. So every position that I take is to help me develop and grow in certain areas, plus money, right? Like, you always want to be, but like a long time ago, I could have took a job at Best Buy and not took a job in education, because Best Buy was paying more money. And those are the decisions that help position you for your ultimate success. So you kind of already know, but if you it I mean, I don't want to like tell you what to do, but if you hone in and hone in on your ultimate goal and explore that and see what you want. This is what I did. I saw what I want in a perfect world, and then I set out to go get it. So I spent a lot of time on my goal, and in a perfect world, I want to fund and run a life prep program for disadvantaged student athletes. I want that program to be in cities across the country. Ultimately, I want it internationally. Perfect world. So what does that do? That's my starting point for reverse engineering.
Right.
How do I get
So how do we
there?
get there? Yeah,
Right.
for
Not not
sure.
even that, like even inside of the program, I was like, I want this program. I want it this way. What am I offering inside the program? So I started doing group fitness, right? I started doing group fitness classes, and I was like, oh, this is an added thing that I can put into the program. And then the group fitness classes make it unique, because not a lot of males are doing group fitness classes. And you can use this as a alternative to, and then I'm still thinking about my goal. I'm like, hold on, there's hundreds of thousands of athletes that are not going pro, and hundreds of thousands of athletes that are in NAIA schools that definitely ain't going pro, but they have to also get an experience so that it will help them long term in their jobs, and they won't just regret going to school. So I'm still thinking about, because all of this stuff that I'm doing for the to better myself for this program, and become that leader that they need, that like I'm basing it off of what I did in college. I was a student, I was an athlete, I was involved in a 4-year organization that certified nonprofit professionals. I was a resident assistant, I did work study. Even in my master's program, I was a graduate assistant. I worked 40 plus hours as a admissions counselor. I was a direct care aide at night. So I would go to work from 8 to 4. I would go to class from 5 to 9 or 6 to 9 or whatever. 10 o'clock, I'm at work from 9 to 6. I had to go back to work. You know, I'm getting homework done at the office, and taking people on tours, and I became the secretary one time, because, or not one time, but like for a period of time, because our secretary left and we got to get scholarship applications. So I was putting myself through the ringer, but not a lot of people did that. Nobody did that, actually. I'm gonna say nobody. Nobody in my school did my undergrad, what I did in undergrad, flying under the radar. Nobody was like, you need to just focus on one thing. It was like, I'm gonna go in here and get the experience, and I'm gonna go all out, and I'm gonna make a way for myself, because I was coming back home to Kansas City, and nobody was giving me a job. I'm a junior in college, about to be a junior in college. And nobody, they wouldn't even hire me to be a waiter. I was like, what? They want me to be a bus boy? Like, no, I'm not about to do that. So that kind of got into my mind. I was like, nah, they want me to lose out here. Cause I know waiters is making way more than the bus boys. I ain't trying to be in the background
Right.
shoveling plates and stuff. So yeah, I mean that's what I say. Like I say it to all Black people, man. We don't look at our goal enough and study it enough to where we know exactly what we need to do to get there, because with all the information that we have, and I have this problem with my students, we got so much information that we need a directed path, even though like we may not know. It's a relaxed vision of what we need, where we need to be, right? I know that's a re what I just explained for the life prep program, that's a relaxed vision. So if it needs to change along the way, I can do that because I'm okay with that. It's not a, this is how it has to be. Does that make sense?
Yeah, for sure.
Okay. Sorry,
Yeah,
I
no,
had
you're
to say
good.
all of that.
No, because it's like you hitting on topics of just random conversations that I'm thinking about that I've had, and again, putting a term to that concept is great because I mean the way I do it, I just base everything off of when, what, where, how, and why. Like if I could answer all of those questions, I should know how I'm getting to my goal or the time frame, all of that. And that goes the same thing with just, either start a new business, starting, a podcast, whatever it is. Because again, having that conversation, like my friend asked me, he wanted to start a podcast. And I was like, okay, well, why? Like, for what? What will you be doing? You want to go on live? Okay, what are you going to be talking about while you're on live? And he was like, well, damn, I didn't think about that. I was like, yeah, I mean,
Exactly,
break it
and
down like
that's the
that,
conversations we having with all Black people. I'm having the same conversations with my friend trying to be a rapper at 37 years old. I'm like, what are you doing? Like, you just need to put stuff out. You need to put a song out a day type of thing. That's
Okay, yeah, for sure.
how late you are to the party.
Exactly, yeah. And it's like once
But
you break it
go
down
ahead.
in that manner, it makes it it ma for me, it made it so much clearer. I was like, oh yeah, that's how you break down a paragraph. We learned that in elementary school. Answer those questions, and that'll at least make it clear for you to, get to the end. So no, I the
So
concept, I'm with it.
that's the book that I'm coming out with next year. Is I created a philosophy for individual achievement that helps people reverse engineer their goals, plus understand success in a way that we need to really understand success, because for foundational Black people, we have a short amount of success in terms of years. You know what I mean? We've come a long way in a short amount of time. So our concept of, even with like life insurance and passing along generational wealth type, we don't even understand those concepts. White people, they understand those concepts because they were passing along slaves as generational wealth from generation to generation. I'm gonna pass this down in their wills and stuff. So that concept is a long term is new to us, because we just now started getting the success that we should have been getting from the beginning, right? So it's that's what I'm coming out with. It's not even
No, I
my
love that. Definitely can't wait to see you drop that.
I
Gotta support that for sure.
appreciate that, because I mean this is my life's work. Like I study this stuff like from all perspectives. Like I listen to whoever, whatever. If you speak in some stuff, like I understand that. Like I look at people's lifestyle when they're talking success, and a lot of white people, they already had at least somebody in their lives that they knew personally that strove for something great, you know. Even if they didn't get it, they had that understanding. So most of them had parents that were entrepreneurs, or you know, tried something, or they had both parents in their lives and they both had successful careers and they never had to, you know, grow up badly or whatever. And they're speaking this success stuff, and I'm like, dude, You don't even like, you can tell me something and I'll listen because I'm open to that. But to talk to the students that I talk to and having the background you got and having the background I got, who gonna be
It's
more
gonna
of a
be
effective?
yep, exactly.
So, I
Exactly.
mean, sorry,
And
I
yeah.
mean,
No,
we
you good. You good. Cause look, I'm gonna bring it back. I'm gonna bring it full circle for you, which is why HBCUs are important, right? Because you get to be in a space and see people that look like you with similar backgrounds striving for success. I mean, there are so many kids that look like us that's never seen a black doctor, seen a black dentist, seen a black lawyer, and now you get to go to school and see that, and then they become your peers. Like, yeah, HBCUs are amazing. and I think they are foundational in these concepts and being able to, have that experience and be opened up to these different just opportunities and a different outlook and worldview on what we can do and be in this world as Black people. So, yeah.
That's the one thing that I say all the time about HBCUs is like people come out of there with confidence, like more confidence than I came out with. Like I didn't go to an HBCU, but like I grew up without all white people in almost every aspect. But like I felt the like they didn't quite know what to teach me. You know what I mean? It was limited on the nuances because like I said, we so far behind that like all of the nuances they already know inherently. You know what I mean? So they couldn't teach me all the nuances that I need to do to and learn to get through my get through. So I basically I was on my own. And I'm still kind of on my own as far as personally dealing with those different nuances that they didn't necessarily have to deal with generation after generation because it was handled. You know, somebody handled a piece of it. You know, our trauma that are growing up without a father figure and grandparents are, you know, your mother's parents being, you know, dying at, you know, in our teens and stuff like that, and not even growing up with grandparents. You see what I'm saying? Like those different things, like nobody had to deal with those things until my generation. So, you know, all right, we went on for that. But
It was
yeah, I love it. I'm sure like
good conversation,
I need all of these people to hear this. Leave us with some encouraging word, or so plug the book and leave us with some encouraging words to end the podcast.
Yes, so again, I am Ayanna Spivey. I am an expert author on the HBCU Royal Queens, a second edition book by the HBCU Experience Movement. It will be dropping September 30th on Amazon. You can also pick up the Southern University System Edition, also currently on Amazon. I got to be a contributing author there. Please follow We Are Educated Inc. on Instagram. We Are Educated Incorporated on Facebook. And you can find me on Instagram at Ayanna Celeste or Ayanna Celeste Spivey on Facebook. And what I'm gonna leave you with is let being yourself be your theme and campaign of your life because you are the only person that can do what you can do. Yeah.
That
I'm gonna
is
leave it
fabulous.
that.
That is fabulous. So I appreciate you being on.
Of course.
This I didn't I was like I know that name from somewhere.
Yes.
I appreciate all the conversation and I'll have this out in the next week.
Oh, yay. I can't wait to share. This is a good conversation. I'm definitely gotta make sure this get plugged because people need to hear this. This is good.
Good, good. I appreciate it. All right, you have a good night.
Of course. You too.
Thank you.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye. I hope you enjoyed this episode of the Success is My Religion podcast. Go get the book. We are partnering with the HBCU Experience Movement for the HBCU Royal University Queen's Second Edition. It's coming out September 30th. Go get it.